What's going on, guys, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Let's Just Talk podcast. I'm super excited to be back, and I hope you're excited for today's chat. I'm really excited to be chatting to Chris all the way from the US. He's got a fascinating story. I'm really interested to kind of dive deeper into it. And as I've shared many times, I think talking about mental health, physical health, well-being, balance, and all that that comes with it, I think is a conversation that we should be having more of. And so the fact that I can be having this conversation today, I'm super excited. So Chris, welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy you're in Australia because I'm getting ready to head there. Like this is the perfect introduction.
Absolutely. We were just talking off air, obviously about a few little things, and then you highlighted the fact that you're on your way over to Australia. What brings you to Australia and taking that journey across the pond?
I got a couple people out there that want me to put a little time and energy into helping them shift their body and their energy and their wellness emotionally, energetically, physiologically, structurally, and psychologically. So I'm going to go down there and do my thing.
I love it. How long are you over here for?
I think I'm short trip. I'll be there probably like 7-8 days.
Yeah, okay. The trip's almost so long in the air that you're almost longer in the air than you are on the ground. But worth the journey, mate. So I hope you're welcomed well. And if you've got any questions about Australia, feel free to ask them to me now. I'm more than happy to shed my light onto it as best as I can. But I'm sure you'll have a great time.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I've always loved Australian people. I've never met an Australian where I was like, oh, I don't like them. You know, they're just direct and straightforward. They got their own opinions and ideas about things, but they're also polite and they're, they're self-educated.
Interesting. It's always interesting to hear kind of people's perceptions on, I guess, we as a nation kind of thing from outside, because I was always, until I met my first American, I always had the kind of very, I guess, closed-minded perception, because I never really traveled or anything like that until I did a lot of travel. I had this perception that loud, brash, kind of very opinionated. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'll ever get along with Americans kind of thing. And then I remember the day very clearly. I did a backpacking tour around Europe with my best mate at the time, and I'd never traveled anywhere at the time, and this was a big thing for both of us to kind of do. Landed in the UK. We had a couple of days where we were staying at a particular hostel before we were moving to another hostel that we're going to have a much longer stay. And we were put into this room of four. And at the first day we finally got there, it was just myself and my mate. And then one person arrived that night, and he arrived quite late, so didn't kind of get to talk to him much. But the next morning, you know, this very Chicago type accent kind of came through, very friendly, very open, very, you know, wanting to have conversations. I'm like, this isn't what I thought Americans would be like. And to this day, he's still a very close mate. And I've been lucky enough to travel to the States a couple of times, go and visit him in Chicago and travel around America with him and without him. But I, to your point of what you just shared then, I haven't met someone from the States that I haven't enjoyed spending time with. You're a beautiful people, really accepting, really open, and conversations always flow really well. And so I love the fact that you think about the same thing about us as well, because personally,
yeah, for sure,
this is a general statement, but when I've met Australians overseas, I want to get away from them as quick as possible. They tend to be just the most horrible people, and I hate our accent and I don't like talking to us. So again, I love meeting people, and it's interesting to see that you've had the opposite view. It's like, nah, you're all great. So I'm glad that we come across well.
Yeah, I mean, and my favorite book is by this woman named Marlo Morgan called Mutant Message Down Under.
Okay, what's that?
Mutant Message Down Under is a story about a woman who leaves the United States, who's like, she has a holistic mindset, and she goes to Australia and she starts a business with half-breed Aboriginal children, building windscreens to put in windows.
Oh, wow.
And then she gets this invitation, which she thinks it's going to be more like the Academy Awards. And she gets this invitation to receive this award from this original Aboriginal group. And she gets in a Jeep, and the guy takes her into the outback for about like a 14-hour drive. And they take her on a walkabout that lasts 9 months long.
What?
And it's her It's her recollection of how that impacted her life.
Wow. And I presume the story is like a truth told story of kind of documenting what that was all about.
Yeah, I think it's more of like, how do I say this? It's a story of truth told as fiction.
Right. Okay. Fantastic. And I mean, I can only presume a 9 month walkabout throughout the Australian outback and around there must be one hell of a story to be able to tell.
Yeah, so I'm excited to put my feet on Australian land.
And I'm presuming your first trip over here then?
First trip. Always wanted
Fantastic.
to go to Australia. It's my very first trip.
Fantastic, mate. Well, again, I hope you're welcomed well in the things that you're coming over to do and experience and help people with. I hope it's the experience that you hope it for, and it's not the last time that you get over here. And I mean, I'm all the
I hope
way.
it's the beginning of the first. I'm like you. I hope it's the very beginning. I was on this podcast, these guys, the name of their podcast was Ridiculously Human, and that was the start of my podcasting journey.
Oh,
And it
fantastic.
was two Australian guys.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, we're all, I mean, I'm all the way over on the West Coast, so it's even further to come
Yeah.
from. I know you said you're landing in Sydney. It's another 4 hours of flying from Sydney to get to us over on the West
Okay.
Coast. But should you ever get over here, mate, let's make sure we touch base, and I'll make
Oh,
sure
for
your time
sure.
in WA is just as fun as I hope that your first trip to Sydney is.
How is the food?
It's a big mix of things, as best as I can probably say. I mean, our entire history is built on immigration, and so we've got food from all over the
Got it. So you
world.
got Thai food, Chinese food, Italian food. You've
Absolutely.
got what else? Who else likes to travel everywhere?
Well, I can say a lot of, I mean, I spent most of my life in Melbourne, and it's a mecca for food. Now, people from Sydney will say, no, we are the mecca for food. And there's this kind of rivalry that's always gone on between
Got
Melbourneites
it.
and Sydneyites. But Melbourne has a lot of influence from kind of Greek culture, Italian culture. So, really good coffee if you love your coffee down there. And a lot of great Italian and Greek type food. I would say since moving over to WA, we're much closer to Southeast Asia in WA. So, there
Got it.
seems to be much more Thai food, Malaysian food, Singapore,
Got
the
it.
Balinese, a lot of those type foods over here. I love Thai food, so that's been a great thing
Yeah,
for
so easy
me.
to digest.
Yeah, beautiful food, super fresh food,
Yeah,
really
super
well. So
fresh, super friendly. Like they create a great atmosphere every time I go to a Thai restaurant. It's quiet, it's peaceful, it's grounded, it's relaxed. Yeah, cool.
I don't think you're going to be short of good food over here, mate. So you're
Okay.
welcomed in many ways, that's for sure.
What are the Australians known for, though, for their own food?
It's a really good question. I mean, I don't know how to kind of say what like Australian food is. Like it, I think it's just a kind of hogmog mesh of everything. And I
But how
don't
about
think
when you have
there's
a holiday, like at Christmas, what do Australians cook for Christmas?
I would say the
Like,
majority of people would have the standard kind of roast type
okay, you guys have a
kind of
roast.
Christmas. Yeah. So I mean, whether it's turkey, whether it's lamb, whether it's chicken, whether it's some sort of roast and then roast veggies. Now, I have an English background. Like I guess many Australians probably have some sort of English line since we were obviously colonized by the English when they kind of dropped us all off here. So I
So you have
love
some shepherd's pie.
No, so a really quintessential kind of thing around Christmas time, especially around roast, is Yorkshire pudding. So kind of think of it
Oh,
like a
okay.
bread type thing. It's you fry up oil really hot in the oven, and then you drop this kind of bread type batter in it, and it kind of crispies and fries the outside, and then makes the inside super fluffy, super delicious. And you just put a bit of salt on that, and it's on the side as a dish that not as a dish but as like a side to some veggies and your roasted meat. So personally that's that how I've ever known Christmas
Got it.
lunch to be, and I would think most people would have some sort of roast dinner, as I said, be it turkey, lamb, chicken, whatever it might be. So that
Okay.
yeah, that would be a Christmas lunch.
Okay, because you know, over here in the States, when we go to an Australian restaurant, right? It's always it's like an Australian pub with English type food.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Like an Australian pub over here to me just feels like an English pub that's been kind of
Yeah.
modernized, for lack of a better word, to kind of be more Australian. And so in pubs in Australia, you'll find things like chicken parmas, which is, you know, a big chicken fillet that's kind of been crumbed and fried, and then you put ham on top, bit of kind of marinara sauce, and then cheese on top of that. So the chicken
Got
parma,
it.
now even that is a contentious kind of thing that we in, again, I'm going to call myself originally from Victoria. If you're from Victoria, it's called a parma. You go to New South Wales, it'll be a palmy. You come to WA, it's a palmy, but pronounced with a Y, not an I, like it is in New South Wales. So again, it's just, we're a mess because we're such a big country. It's almost like their own little countries within each
Yeah.
other that kind of fight and argue about things. And again, when you're drinking in South Australia, in New South Wales, they might be called middies when the kind of the glass that you kind of order it in Victoria, it's called a pot. Over in WA, it might be a schooner. Like, again, they're just all these different
Got
words.
it.
And so I've done it here. I'll go into a pub just to grab a drink or something and say, "Oh, can I just grab a pot or something?" And they look at you as if you've just said something completely foreign. It's like, "Pot, what the hell are you talking about?" And they'll get out a glass. "Do you mean a middie?" And I'm like, "Yeah, that one, the smaller one," kind of thing. So it's just all over the place. We can't kind of come together and kind of have a consensus on this is what we're going to call things. This is how it's going to be.
Okay.
Just to keep you on your toes.
Yeah, tribe mentality. I like it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, I've been lucky enough to travel throughout the States as well. And it's very different from West Coast to East Coast. And
Oh, 1,000%.
I haven't had enough of traveling through the center of the States, but I'm going to presume again throughout the kind of Midwest and through the central type parts of the US, probably very different ways
It's
of
very
food and
different.
different cultures and
Yeah.
things like that.
Personalities are different. The energy's different. The way that they present themselves is different. The accents. Yeah, you're right. America, they might call it the United States of America, but it feels like a bunch of different countries. For
And
sure.
where are you yourself?
I'm on the West Coast.
Okay. And
I'm
have
in Los
always been?
Angeles. No, I'm from the East Coast. So I love the tradition of the East Coast. I like how people are direct in the East Coast. But what I prefer on the West Coast is the freedom and space.
Okay.
Right?
And
The open-mindedness.
interesting. And that's kind of, I guess, where I wanted to kind of bring in, I mean, your story of kind of former SEAL, and I'd love to kind of talk about that, because that kind of interests me a lot ever since, and I don't know if you've found this as well, but ever since kind of David Goggins kind of came onto the scene and kind of his whole journey that he's been through, his books that he's released, there seems to be, I guess, an appetite for more knowledge around, you know, these special forces and different aspects of especially the US armed forces as well. Is that, have you found that there seems to be kind of more questions around that, or I
I
mean,
think
always
there's
being in it
always,
yourself, there's always been that kind of
yeah,
interest?
there's always been a mysticism around the SEAL teams, right? Because for so long, we were incognito, right? And then the movie came out, I think, what, 1989? 1989, 1990, called Navy SEALs. And then people suddenly knew about this organization that existed for a very, very long time. And then, Richard Marchenko, he wrote a bunch of books. And then you got Jocko Willink. He sort of came on the scene. And then shortly after that was David Goggins. And in me, I have a completely different sort of spiel. Mine is I'm in the opposite direction of those guys, but the same mindset, right? The mindset that is get up and get the job done, right? Except my job now is reducing stress as opposed to putting stress in.
Interesting. Okay. And has
Yet the
that come
mindset
from,
is the same.
I was going to say, has that come from, I guess, the experiences that you went through while being part of that special forces, or where
Yeah,
do you
for
think
sure.
that kind of
Definite.
has evolved from?
That The mindset, I've always had a very strong, well-defined ego. So I've always been very, very competitive. When you go through something like SEAL training, their job is to break you down, right? And then to build you back up what they consider to be the right way, right? Which is a guy that's focused on team first and me second. And when you graduate and you walk across that stage and you get your diploma, you've completed a rite of passage. And by the time you get to the other side of the stage, you realize very quickly, or at least I did, that I'm my own man and I'll figure my life out. And it was very, how do I say this, satisfying. It brought me a lot of peace. I think there's a space in society that needs to be created so that there is a rite of passage, right? If you look in all tribal communities, the males had a rite of passage. And that's a day where you put down being a boy and you take on being a man, right? And you take on certain responsibilities, right? Your ability to be protective, your ability to produce, your ability to provide, your access to dutifulness, your access to leadership. You know, when you start to tune into these qualities on an everyday basis, then they start to mold and shape you. And I think for me, as I started putting more tension and stress in my body, those mindsets were a little too rigid. And I ended up with pain in my body. And that pain is what led me down the road that I'm in now. Yet there's no way I would have gotten to that pain if I hadn't been through SEAL training and the SEAL teams, and I didn't deal with a lot of childhood trauma. And in the end, it was actually a gift. So when I look back, or I look at myself today, I'm happy with where I'm at. So when I look back, all the things that I thought were unnecessary, I realized were necessary for me to get to where I'm at. And so I have a lot of peace in my heart around my time in SEAL trainings, the SEAL teams, and all of the childhood stress and trauma that I went through.
The thing that comes to mind, and it's always something I've wanted to question, and so I'm really happy I've got someone like yourself in front, is that it seems to me like Navy SEAL type training, it's very famous for, you know, buds and the different things that you got to go through, and it seems like it's been done that way forever and a day. Now, I'm sure there might have been slight alterations to how they do a certain test or how that, but it seems very like set in stone at like, this is what you do, and this is the next step, and this is the next step. And as you said, that, you know, their aim is to kind of break you down, build you back up in their kind of way that I guess brings out a soldier that they can be very reliable, that this is the kind of soldier we know we need, and this is a soldier we kind of have at the end. My question is that knowing all of that, are there other ways, or has there ever been chats to talk about, are there other ways that you can do that without going through that way, in that every human being is a very different human being? Now, I say that with a caveat that I presume you said it yourself that you're a very competitive person, you know, always striving to do your best. That I presume the individual that, you know, applies for, you know, SEAL teams or special forces teams, and it has probably a very similar kind of mindset, in that that's kind of how that, but I still think there's variances even in those who are striving to be the best. And so, again, I ask the question, is it, has there ever been experimentation on, well, this has worked, but could there be a more effective way? Could we change things up? Could we do training differently, be it physical training, the psychological training, the different training that we're going to put you through, that is going to end in maybe a better soldier, or the same kind of soldier, just done in a different way?
I mean, with the systems that I've been building over the last 5 years, you know, that question that you presented to me is it's on my mind a lot. And the reason why it's on my mind, because I know that there's better ways to do things. Like, for instance, when I went through SEAL training, there was a lot of guys that rolled out of training because they had their iliotibial band friction syndrome was so great, they couldn't walk, right? Others got posterior tib tendonitis so bad that they can't walk, right? Other guys got runner's knee so bad that they can't walk, right? They have these overuse soft tissue injuries, or they got shoulder impingements or neck things. And these are guys that I think would have done really well in the SEAL teams and would have served the SEAL teams really well. And in terms of the budget that they have, they would have got at least the attrition rate, instead of being 92%, I could get that attrition rate down to probably about 60%. Because what they don't know is what hurts them, right? And so there's a lot of ignorance in the SEAL, in SEAL training, and there's a lot of ignorance in the SEAL teams. And so the guys just think, just go hard every day, and then, yeah, well, that's great until you can't walk, right? Mm. And if there's a simple solution, meaning all you have to do is remove a little bit of tension from this guy's body and he completes SEAL training, or these guys come back from direct action operations and we pull out the stress and the imprint of that experience out of their nervous system, and they don't have to take that home to their children, to their dog, to their wife, to their community, you got a completely different person, right? Mm. So they're able to go in and do the job, but then there isn't taking the half step back after the job is done, right? Because there's a cost when your mindset is only go hard every day, every second. There's a cost, and there's a physiological cost. There is an emotional cost. There's a psychological cost, and there's a structural cost. If you could reduce the structural cost, there would be very little psychological, emotional, or energetic cost. And, you know, if you think about how much money they spend every year to put guys through training, and you only graduate 8 out of every 100, that's a terrible return on investment. And the reason why it's terrible is because they continue to do things the same way every single day. And if you implemented 30 minutes a day of a different strategy that I have, which would allow the trainees to remove the tension from the day before, their bodies would be ready the next day. In fact, they could take on more stress, more tension, and more distortion with very little negative effect on them. And so, look, people have a choice, right? You can either grow through negative benefit or you can grow through positive benefit. Well, what if you could positively grow through negative benefit, right? That's not been done in the special forces. And if they implemented these strategies, you would have guys whose their intuition would be 3 to 5 times higher, right? Their physical strength would be 2 to 3 times higher. Their speed would be at least 15-20% higher, right? Their agility, their emotional agility, their energetic abundance would be 2 to 3 times higher, right? You would have supreme soldiers in the world. The guys in the U.S. Navy SEAL teams, if they opened the door to let me come in there and teach them the things that I know, they would take this to a whole never level that we've never seen before.
And my question then, as soon as you say that, is has there been any willingness or openness at all to kind of even have that conversation that, hey, there are people out here that could make our soldiers and the humans behind the soldier a more better functioning, people. Better person, be it in the field or be it at home? Has that conversation ever been open to
I mean, that's a conversation I've had with a couple of my buddies that are out of the teams, but in the SEAL teams, I don't think so. Because if you're getting recognition for the things that you're doing and the way that you're doing them, why would you change things, right? It's if they're willing to look at the losses or some of the abhorrent behavior associated with guys in the SEAL teams, unless they're willing to look at that and go, hey, let's reevaluate, let's find some guys out there that are doing some interesting things in the world, nothing's going to change, right? Now, here's the interesting, funny thing, we're having this conversation. 5 days ago, I was in Coronado, Okay, which is where Buds is. And I was there with my stepmom. And I took her to the Coronado Caves and we drove to the beach, which is right where the guys do all the training. So I'm about a half mile down from SEAL training. I'm looking and I can feel the cold wind, right, coming off the ocean. And I remember the smell, right? And all these feelings came back of like, oh, I remember what this was like. And I hadn't been back there in that environment since what, 1990, what, 1992? That I've been walked across that same exact zone, right? So what are we talking? 31 years ago? And I sat there and I was like, oh, I get it. I get this now. Wow, it would be great for me to open up the door and help those guys. Because the work that I've been doing, which is reducing stress and tension and distortion emotionally, structurally, psychologically, would help these guys be more present. And
I
if
could
they could be
imagine.
more, I mean, if they could be more present, they could take advantage of the interpersonal romantic relationships that they're in. They could take advantage of all these other opportunities that are out there for these guys to shine.
The analogy I've always loved and I always use is that, again, this guy was giving this TEDx talk about when he was on the top of Mount Everest, and he was saying, you can be super motivated by hearing this story now. And same thing goes with, when you hear people talk of the depths of not despair, but the depths of kind of having to really just pull every single bit that you can out of your own psychology and physiology when in really tough situations, which I can only imagine, Buds and different, special forces type training systems that there are. He calls it the warm seat hypothesis. He said, you're going to get motivated right now by my story. And, I've read stuff about Jock, and I've read the David Goggins books, and you get there and you do get this kind of pump while you're sitting there, and it's like, wow, that just, I want to go and do these things. And, I can imagine being pushing myself, but he calls it the warm seat hypothesis. Is he says that you're hearing all of these incredible feats of human endurance and pushing yourself to the limit, but you're hearing it in this beautiful auditorium, or you're reading that book while you're in bed at night and it's nice and cozy. He said, you can only really appreciate what this is like when you are in a situation where the shit has hit the fan, when it's 100 kilometer hour freezing winds and you're on the top of the mountain and you've been shitting yourself for the last 2 days trying to get up to the peak of Everest, or you've had no sleep in the last 100 hours and you're having to hold yourself in this freezing frigid water of the coastline or where you were, obviously where Buds were. And that's when you can really start to actually draw on that kind of internal motivation and pull that out of you. He said, you can't truly understand it while you're in a warm kind of environment. And so I say all of that to kind of ask the questions like, how difficult is it for not only someone in that kind of situation going through that training, but for people sitting at home kind of listening to this conversation that might be, inspired or motivated, like, gee, that was a really inspiring chat that I just, had heard Chris and Adam have today. I'm going to do something about my physical health, my mental health, my well-being, and how to kind of get people to actually take that action from a mindset of it's going to get difficult and I'm going to push myself through those difficult times rather than feeling inspired when you're comfortable and kind of taking it easy at the moment, listening to this conversation.
Here's the funny thing. When I got out of the SEAL teams and I entered back into civilian land society, I was subconsciously and unconsciously constantly looking for ways to keep that edge, right? And from the position that I'm in now, I would say if the shit is hitting the fan, I always have another gear. Okay. Other people, shit hits the fan and they fold in on themselves. And I have found a lot of pleasure now in bending the knee, right? Saying, hey, I feel overwhelmed. I think this might be a little too much for me. This started when I was in Iceland in 2000 and I was in Iceland 2016. And I was in a sweat lodge. And on the fifth round, they call it the spirit round. They throw a bunch of hot water on the hot stones, and a bunch of steam goes up, and they tell you raise your hands all the way in the air. And I had my hands up, and for the first time, I heard this little voice in the back of my head, and it says, "Dude, you don't have to have your hands in the air. You don't have anything more to prove." Because I was always like the one that was going to put their hands down last, right? And that little voice said, "Look, the ground is cold. It's comfortable. Why don't you lay down there and relax?" And I was like, "I think there's a chink in the armor. I think I'm going to lay down and see what this feels like." And I laid down there and I felt what that felt like. And I go, "You're right. I don't have to live like that anymore. I don't have to be the last guy standing in the middle of the storm. If I don't like the storm, I can just get in my car and drive somewhere else into something pleasant that I do like." I think other people are probably the opposite, right? Like the storm, as soon as they turn on the news, there's a storm coming, right? They've already packed their car 3 days before. I was the guy that was going to pack his bag like when I saw the storm, okay? Or I was going to determine halfway through the storm, I probably could survive this. This is not going to be that big of a deal. So I think for the listener, you have to figure out what kind of person you are. Because I have a really strong, well-defined ego, my tendency is to generate too much fire, right? My go-to is to push too hard and to go stoic, right? Other people, they have the opposite tendency. Well, if you have the opposite tendency, then get yourself into a situation that forces you to develop some more inner self-esteem around discomfort. Okay. I'm okay with being uncomfortable. I'm okay with being wet, cold, and miserable because field training is designed to let the instructors know. If you're the kind of guy that's going to make a good decision when you're cold, wet, and miserable, and I know when I'm cold, wet, and miserable, I can make a really good decision. Other people, when they're cold, wet, and miserable, they're going to make a very poor decision. And their decision first is going to look towards what's the most comfortable thing to do rather than what's the most prudent thing to do.
It's a really
And
interesting. Oh, sorry.
go ahead. No,
I was
go
going to
ahead.
say it's a really interesting answer. I never expected you to answer it that way. I tend to, when I kind of am kind of formulating, our conversations and as they're flowing, I'm kind of formulating questions in my head of where I think it might go. And when I asked that question, again, my perception just was like, you'd say lean into that discomfort, really kind of test yourself, push yourself. And when you then said almost the opposite to that, that really kind of took me back a little bit. And it's kind of like that's a really interesting perspective in that there are times in your life where the shit is really hitting the fan. You feel very overwhelmed that bending the knee, as you said, or kind of just taking a step back and going, I don't have to prove anything here. There's nothing that I need to kind of show to the world that is going to make this situation any better. So just take a step back or walk away from the storm, kind of take that step back. Because I think so much of today's society and so many of the kind of self-help books these days are all about lean into that discomfort, push harder, do more, aim for more, go for more, because this world is always telling us you need to have more, do more, buy more, all these kind of more. And so I love the fact that you kind of the initial response to that was like, take a step back, lean away from it for a bit. And that I think, I mean, I'm all about balance these days and trying to help people find balance in their lives. And that doesn't mean to be balanced always in all ways. And I think that being balanced can sometimes mean that there are certain situations where, no, I think you should lean into it. You should find that discomfort, test yourself, push those barriers and really kind of go for it and kind of find where that kind of limit is for you. But then just as you've said, then there are other times to balance out those times where you do lean in, that taking a step back and realizing this isn't a situation I need to prove anything. I can kind of really lean back off that and kind of take a different approach to it.
Yeah, I think goal setting is important. And I think, and this is where I want to draw a distinction. I think if you're the type of person who sets a goal and like your friend was talking, the warm seat theory, yep. It's so easy to set a goal from the comfort of your bedroom, right? And choose a goal that is going to push your edge a little bit. Okay. And then complete, regardless of how long it takes you, make sure you complete the goal. If you set a goal to do the Ironman in Hawaii, finish the race no matter what. I don't care if you have to walk that bike in, right? And it takes you, you know, an extra 6 hours. Like, complete on the goal. Okay. Now, if you could take the David Goggins approach, right? Like, his toes are bleeding, he's still running, he gets some tape, he tapes up his you know, his toes towards his shin, so it's going to create less force on some specific part of his foot and be more comfortable. If that's what you need to do to prove to yourself at least one time that you have what it takes in life to complete your goals, I think that's okay. But I think living like that every moment, eventually there's a cost. And the cost is there's going to be a reduction in your energy. It's going to impact the way that you sleep. It's going to impact the foods that you're attracted to. It's going to impact how you communicate. I'm of the same breath that you are now, which is balance, right? There are those moments where it's necessary to take a half step back. And in those choices, do the comfortable thing or the prudent thing. Always do the prudent thing, right? Because the prudent thing is usually to the benefit of both parties. The comfortable thing is usually to the benefit of yourself. And I think there's value in being selfless, and I think there's value in being selfish. And you got to figure out, where are you on that spectrum, right? If you're typically a self-focused person, then build transpersonal skills. If you're a transpersonal person who gets enjoyment and satisfaction out of helping everyone else, do the prudent thing. Invite somebody in to help you. Like, figure out where you're at on the scale of development and then do the opposite. Enough that it moves your needle forward and you get to continue to keep evolving as a human, because life goes by so fast.
I mean, you've just really kind of formulated in your words things that I've been trying to see how I can formulate myself, for not only myself, but also for the people I work with. Whether it was explained, I've always been an exercise physiologist. And so my world has always been revolved around helping people physically. If they're coming to me with an injury, surgery, you know, post-surgery or whatever it may be, it's physical kind of practices that I use to help them walk better, get stronger, move better, whatever it might be. But I've really, over the years, found that what I actually do is a very small part around the physiology of the human, but the psychological kind of work that I do. I'm not a psychologist, but I am drawn upon by my clients, by the conversations we have and the different questions that are asked in sessions and things like that. You know, there is a very psychological kind of tone to it all. And I loved how you just kind of shared there that, you know, looking inward, see who you are, and then I guess pushing the needle in the opposite direction in a way to start balancing that out. As you said, I think there's so many people that would find themselves there in quote selfless type people, and that we love helping others, love, you know, always putting in time at the school with the kids and volunteering yourself out and giving out that energy, and trying to find things that turn it inwards and asking for that help. Because again, so many people in, again, self-help type books and things like that are saying, you know, give more, do more, or it's the opposite. Take more time for yourself. And it's not really having that more balanced approach and, you know, realizing that people are all different. They have their kind of different personalities. That's a good thing. It's great that you love to care for others, but then also balancing that out by inviting, yeah, as you said, people to come into your life to ask for help, because I guess people never ask for help these days. It's always like pushing out. So I love that aspect of it as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've been conditioned, we've been indoctrinated into this idea that selflessness has more value than being selfish. And selfish has this negative connotation to it. And selfish simply means to be self-focused. And if you study any psychology and you understand the concept of Pavlov's dog, right? And what he was trying to tell people, people are self-motivated. And you have to figure out as an individual what makes you feel good, right? I started out very self-focused, right? Other guys went to SEAL teams and SEAL training because they wanted to protect the borders of the country, and they rah, rah, rah. And no, that was never me. I went to SEAL training because I wanted to be challenged personally, right? Because I knew that once I got through that experience, I was going to know more about me, and nothing was going to stop me from doing the things that I wanted to experience and achieve. And all that was self-focused. Until I had enough pain in my body that I had to sort of surrender and bend a knee, reach out for help. Until I reached out for help, I didn't turn my life around to then devote my life to helping others, right? Because I was so self-focused. Now that I spend almost all of my time helping others, I have a satisfaction that I never got from winning. In sports, I have a satisfaction that I never got from winning in sports. And it's this: maybe 4 years from now, I'll be at an airport in London and somebody will go, "Christopher," and I'll turn around. "Oh my God, I always wanted to tell you, guess what? You changed my whole life with that one conversation that we had." I don't even remember the person, right? And I go, "Tell me more. What were we talking about?" "Yeah, we were on a flight to Greece. And we sat beside each other." And I'm like, "Oh my goodness." And I start remembering that conversation. And it changed a whole person's life, right? And so there are moments where we can create impact. And every moment is an opportunity to serve powerfully. And sometimes those moments have to be turned inward so you can be served by others powerfully.
I'd love to ask the question in that it was always about you when you went into SEAL training, and it was, you know, yes, about proving something to yourself. In going through that training, did that change how you saw that by the end of that? Or was it even right through to the very end? It was, I knew I'd go into this. I knew I'd be challenged. I knew I'd push myself through, and I found that I could and I would. And that was exactly kind of the experience it was, I thought it would be, and it ended up being. Or was there a transformation in you, or kind of how you perceived it, or as you did go through it?
Yeah, there's a transformation. Once you go through BUDS and you get to the SEAL teams, they're very different, or they're different organizations, right? And each SEAL team has its own mentality. I was at SEAL Team 5, which they called Team Hollywood, right? So guys were, you know, playing volleyball, drinking beer, going out at night, partying their asses off, coming in the morning, working out like gorillas, and getting after it again. You know, it was like a laid back environment. If you went to SEAL Team 1, SEAL Team 1's nickname was Stalag 1, right? Everything was very serious. They took it very serious because they were the first SEAL team, you know? And so each team has its own aura, its own presence, its own identity. And when you leave SEAL training and you get to the SEAL teams, it's about a different thing than you thought it was. I thought I was going to be like James Bond. And I got to the SEAL teams like, this is nothing like James Bond. Like, this is grind it out hardcore all day. So it's all about the camaraderie once you get in SEAL teams, right? It's about your platoon mates. It's about getting ready for being deployed. And, you know, there's a hierarchy in the SEAL teams. Like, there's guys that when you get into SEAL teams and you're new, it's very different than you're going to another platoon and you're an old guy. You've got two deployments underneath your belt. When you get in the SEAL teams at first, you're what's called an FNG, right? A fucking new guy. And I remember I went in my platoon space, you know, my LPO said, look, you're an FNG. I better never hear your mouth. This whole platoon. That's like 18 months of my life. It's a big guy. And he was hardened. He was a hardened man. He had been through, he'd been in the SEAL team way a long time, right? He was well into his 30s. I was like a young buck. And I was like, oh, I'm an FNG. I'm a new guy. I'm not allowed to say anything. All I'm allowed to do is learn. And so my first platoon was, you know, that was a tough pill to swallow. Because I liked to be the de facto leader wherever I was. And now I had to lead through being really quiet. So I figured out ways to let my light shine and maintain my position as a fucking new guy.
And I can't remember the movie. I think he was a sniper shooter or something in it, but the whole movie premise was around what you were just kind of talking about earlier today, is that like, how easy is it to kind of switch out of that mode? And I asked that question purely because that guy who, as I said, told you to sit down, shut up, you're an FNG. And you said he's this hardened guy. He'd been in the system for a long time. And this is, did you ever see him kind of switch out of that mentality?
No.
Like, was it ever a moment?
Never. I've never seen him switch out of a moment. And, I mean, out of that mindset.
And like,
he was always on.
The movie I talk about is that this guy would be deployed and he felt so comfortable when he was on deployment because like, this is who I am. This is my story. Yeah. This is where I feel. And then he'd come back and he's walking down the aisle, walking down the aisle with his kids and buying Cocoa Pops. And he's just like, this just feels so awkward and weird. And like, I asked all that question and led it with, did that guy ever break that, in that the longer you spent in that, did you find it more and more difficult every time you came back, or now being in, as you said, when you left it all and kind of came back into civilian type life, how hard is it to kind of switch off that mindset of this is who I have been for so long?
Yeah, this is a good question. Once you have that kind of stress in your nervous system, there is no turning that off. That's on. Your nervous system is trapped in a hypervigilant state of function, right? And you're always looking to do whatever you need to stay on edge. And the pain that I had in my body forced me to bend a knee and reach out and ask for help. And then I started adopting holistic principles, meditation, yoga, body work, deep tissue massage, acupuncture. As I started reducing my lifetime accumulated stress load, my mindset shifted. I got to escape that hypervigilant state of function. And it's funny, I was at this event in Las Vegas, and this guy comes up to me, and he's an Asperger genius. And he said, how did you do it? And I never met this guy before. It's the first thing out of his mouth. I was like, how did I do what? And he goes, I used to be in a SWIC program and I met a lot of guys in the SEAL teams. And you're the only guy that I've ever felt their energy is now like a civilian. You're the only person. How the hell did you do it? And then I sat down with him and told him this is exactly what I did. So I probably am the only one to escape, meaning go through an experience and then take the experience completely out of my nervous system, keep all the positive benefits, and never be labored by the negative benefits.
The the follow-up to that then is there's so many people, you know, these days who live in a hyper kind of flight or fight type mentality, be work stress, life stress, relationship stress, all those stresses that do come into our lives. So how does that person sitting at home listening to this conversation now start breaking down that story that they've always told themselves that this is my life, this is how it needs to be? And yeah, as you said, live through those lived experiences. Where does someone start, you know, today? And I've always said this, I love people walking away with some sort of nugget from any conversation I have that's something I can act on. That's something I can do that might be the catalyst that starts the snowball effect. And you have all these other amazing things that people can do down the line. But what's, you know, when people are feeling so overwhelmed by the world, so stressed, and like, I cannot see a way out of this life that I have and this stress that is in this life, what's that first step that people can take and the easiest kind of step that can start, maybe start that catalyst?
I mean, the challenge here is that every human is different, right? Which we discussed earlier. And so for people who like to take action, right, the most obvious thing is to remove tension, get involved with some level of holistic care. At least those will be what I call positive stress management tools. The first step is to break your addiction to negative stress management tools. Question is, what are negative stress management tools? Nicotine, caffeine, alcohol, marijuana, pharmaceutical drugs, recreational drugs, food coloring, preservatives, high trans fats. Like, reduce your addiction to those substances, meaning that the next week only have half as much, right? If you're used to having 3 cookies a night and a bowl of ice cream, 5 days a week, only have it 3 days a week, right? If you're used to having 3 cups of coffee a day, only have a cup and a half next week. The next week, have half of that. The next week, have half of that. The next week, have half of that, until you've broken the cycle of stress. Now, the reason why people feel overwhelmed is because of their addiction to some behavior, right? Whether it's a substance, you've got, what do you got these days? You got anger, right? You got porn addiction. You've got pathological lying. You've got highly expressed negative egoic behaviors. Like, whatever your thing is, grab a chair and sit down in front of a mirror in your house and start asking yourself some basic questions. Like, look into your own eyes, right? Look into the eyes of your own soul and go, hey, what do I need to know? And your soul will talk to you, okay? Who do I need to get to help me, right? What's really going on here? Where do I go for support? Like, sit down and get real with yourself, because the truth is 99.9% of all humans are living in fight or flight, whether they're 3 months old or they're 77 years old. I've been researching this for 100,000 hours. I've tested this in 50,000 sessions. Doesn't matter if you're poor, if you're black, if you're white, if you're tall, if you're short, if you're educated, if you're undereducated, every single one of them is trapped in fight or flight. And so the question is, how do you create a successful pattern interrupt? Because humans are doing everything that they can to manage the stress that they have. So you can't just take away a heroin addict's heroin away from them. You have to be able to give them something in replacement, right? In response to that. So you give them methadone, right? And now they're on that, and that helps them break that cycle. So if you're at home and you're feeling overwhelmed in some way, you are, trust me, and you're going to be honest about it, then sit down. The first step you can take is just to sit down and tell yourself, look in the mirror, get honest. I'm overwhelmed. I'm overstressed. The strategies that I'm using aren't working to reduce my overwhelm. Who could I go talk to that might be able to give me some direction? Because as soon as you pull somebody in from the outside into your inner story, you've already broken your habit of excessive emotional self-reliance. And excessive self-emotional reliance is the number one cause of all stress. Because you feel like you got to do it all on your own. Right? Think about it. Look, 300 years ago, if you're in the United States and you're on a horse and your horse accidentally bumped into somebody else on a horse and he had a gun and he didn't like the way that you looked, he could shoot you in the back and just keep riding. Right? Like, and this was like standard operating procedure. Okay. And if you were a woman in Australia, you know, 700 years ago, you couldn't just walk to the market all by yourself. Okay. You might get kidnapped. You might be beaten. You might be raped, right? There's all these intense survival-based strategies that have been passed off from a minimum of 14 generations, right down into your body, the listener who's listening right now, right down into your body right now. And so you have all of these, you call them, deconstructive behaviors that stand in the way of your own sense of peace, your own sense of emotional groundedness, your own sense of confidence, your own sense of righteousness. And so the most prudent thing that you can do is, one, be honest with yourself, and then two, invite somebody in that you trust and tell them the thing that you're struggling with. Right? Maybe you've been cheating on your wife for the last 10 years. Maybe you've been stealing money from your company. Maybe you've been dishonest with your husband because you're scared that he might hit you. Maybe you've been dishonest with your children because you have a lot of shame or guilt. Maybe you got some sexual stress or sexual trauma from your past and you haven't told anyone or dealt with it. Like, everyone has something. Everyone has an alcoholic in their family somewhere. Everyone has a drug addict. Everyone has someone who's verbally abusive. Everyone has had all of these things. And it's had an impact. And the question is, are you brave enough to look in the mirror and go, yeah, I'm fucked up? And if you're willing to do that, then your body's willing to go, oh, well, at least she's willing to be honest. I guess there's no need for me to hold on to this anymore. It's the dishonesty that keeps the stress and the tension and the distortion alive in your body, your brain, and your nervous system. So what does it require? Something very simple. An inner, honest conversation that leads to an outer, honest conversation so you can break the monotony of this pattern that you're trapped in and too scared to let anybody know about because you're afraid that they might take a shit on you and throw you into a mailbox and never want to talk to you again. Right?
That word you use, simple, as you said, I always love the saying, things can be simple, but doesn't mean they're easy. And I think you hit the nail on the head when simple. Just get a chair, sit down in front of a mirror, start asking those questions. But I think, as you said, people are very afraid to do that because they feel that then their true self is being exposed. And if I am exposing my true self, and as you said, whether that is I've been dishonest with my partner or I've been doing things at work I shouldn't have been doing or whatever those kind of things are that is your true self, that people are just going to go, well, I don't like that version of you. And then your entire world can feel like it's going to crumble and disintegrate. And it's like, I've worked my whole life to get here into this, in quote, happy place where, as you said, when you're truthfully honest with yourself, are you truly happy in the space that you are? But so again, I lead all with that to say that simple, yeah, start asking those questions of yourself and invite those people into your life, but not easy. How can people take that leap from, well, I know how simple it is, but I just don't want to be honest with myself. Like, is it just a matter of there will come a time where you will feel that you are, Or some people can live their whole life and go, no, I'm just never going to be honest with myself and those around me. So how can people actually take that action to
okay,
do
this
those
is
things?
This is easy. This is simple. Okay, before you go to bed tonight, you say to yourself 9 times every night, body, fire yourself from rescuing others from having bad feelings about me. Because the beautiful thing about your conscious mind is it can have a deep, meaningful conversation with your subconscious body. And if you give it direction and instruction, it will follow suit. And once people fire themselves from rescuing other people from having bad feelings about them, they're free to be themselves. But as long as they're worried about other people having bad feelings about them, they become manipulatable to themselves. And so say that 9 times before you go to sleep every single night until you wake up and go, okay, I think I'm ready to have that conversation in front of the mirror, right? Because everyone has experienced something in their childhood that was beyond their capacity to process at an emotional level. And when you're willing to get down and bend the knee, sit in the chair, and tune in with yourself, your spirit, your soul, your body, your energy is willing to go, hey, man, he or she actually cares, right? I'm getting attention and affection and consideration from myself. If I can give that to myself, others are willing to give it to me. If I'm unwilling to give that to myself, others are unwilling to give that to me, right? And so whatever I'm doing with me, I'm inviting other people in to relate with me in that way. So if I'm open to myself, other people become open to me. If I can be transparent and honest with myself, people will be transparent and honest with me. If I can be clear and direct with myself, people will be clear and direct with me. Why? Because you are I and I are you. There's a concept called oneness, right? What does that mean? That means that you are me and I am you. And so if I'm willing to be honest with me, you're willing to be honest with yourself when you're around me. You see, if you're willing to be compassionate with yourself, I'm willing to be compassionate with myself when I'm around you. Because all nervous systems vibrate to the highest functioning nervous system in a collective field.
The thought that kind of comes to mind, just to kind of play the other side for a moment, is that let's say I get into that space and I finally feel, yep, I can do this. I'm sitting in front of the mirror. I'm going to ask these questions of myself, and I'm going to invite this friend I've had for my lifetime, someone I really trust, someone I really love, and I know I can be honest with them. I sit down with Bob, my best mate of 40 years, and I say, Bob, this is what's been going on in my life and I need some help. And then Bob turns around and goes, you're a piece of shit. I didn't think that you were this kind of human being. And you know, and I would consider that that would be quite earth shattering for someone who thought, this is someone I can truly trust. And I'm in this place where I can be vulnerable. I'm going to let them in. I'm going to, you know, ask for help. And then this person that I think is going to be there for me actually shatters my world. What does someone kind of do in that kind of, do you kind of brush off and go,
perfect.
Okay, cool, move on. I'll ask someone else. Or is it kind of sit
no,
with that
it's
person?
Perfect.
Kind of-
it's perfect. It's like, you know what? I felt the same way about myself for the last 40 years. It's the reason why I never told anyone, because I always felt like a piece of shit. I always felt like an imposter. I always felt I wasn't worthy. Can you relate to that? Yeah, I think I can relate to that. Okay. Hey, Bob, I appreciate you being honest.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Again, an answer I didn't expect kind of coming back. And I think when I hear you say that, I think that most people could probably really relate to that, that once, as you said, you're truly honest with yourself and then you accept that honesty in yourself, that people giving you that response that, yeah, you are a piece of shit in the way that you have been and how you've been feeling about yourself, that you can then actually start to heal from that and move forward from that and actually have meaningful conversations with people that actually lead in a direction that improves your life in a meaningful way.
Yeah, because the thing is, you've already fired yourself from rescuing other people from having bad feelings about you because you've said what I told you 9 times every night for 28 days, right? So now you're having a conversation with Bob. And like you said, Bob's like, you're a total piece of shit. I didn't expect that to come out of your mouth. And guess what? You feel no need to defend yourself. And you're like, you know what, Bob? You're right. I have felt this way about myself for 40 years. Let me tell you what happened to me when I was 7. And then Bob's like, what the fuck? Why didn't you tell me this many years ago? And you go, I felt guilty. I felt ashamed. I didn't want anybody to know. And now Bob can now relate and he can go, oh, well, you know, that something happened to me when I was 6 and I never told anybody. You know, my uncle shamed me in front of my dad and my dad didn't do anything. He didn't stand up for me, which is why I still hate my fucking uncle today. And suddenly this guy's now getting this off of his chest, right? And now instead of holding that stoic position, right? You can now be in a state of vulnerability, and that vulnerability, you see each other's humanity. And in seeing the other person's humanity, you can let down the wall. Because once you can let down the wall and you can share all the things that you feel guilty about or shameful of, no one can ever have control over you anymore. Nothing can have control over you, and your perception of self changes, which means now you can have the experiences that you've always wanted to have, which is deep connection.
And there's a book out when you use that word connection, it always kind of takes me to Johan Hari's book, Lost Connections. And I feel that this day and age that we're living in now is that even though we're in quote more connected because of social media, I feel like we're even less connected because you just don't have that humanness about it. You know, it's like I've loved this conversation that you and I have had, and the fact that social media or, you know, these kind of programs allow us to have conversations across the planet from each other. But I know I would have loved to have this conversation in person in a studio even more, because that connectedness that you get from actually being in front of someone. And so I ask that question and say that is the way forward, kind of as you see it, to kind of allow each other to see each other's humanity within each other and have that connection, is your kind of recommendation, or are your thoughts kind of get in front of others more, spend more time with others, kind of try and have those stories told between each other more often? Or is there a different way that we kind of move forward to try and bring us back together a bit more, rather than kind of as we seem to be more splintering from each other?
I think people are in a position now where these types of conversations, or at least the potential of them, is being discussed. And now that these are being discussed, there's going to open up naturally more opportunities for this to happen, right? Because you and I are now space holders, right? For this idea that we're sharing with your listeners. And if one person that listens to this podcast says that thing 9 times, right? Fires himself from rescuing others from having bad feelings about them, and then takes the next eventual step of having a deep, meaningful conversation with themselves, and then invites somebody and they trust. And if you don't have anybody in your life that you trust personally, hire someone professionally, right? Now, you've got somebody you can get this off your chest with. You no longer need to hold that any longer. I think women have been doing their part to do that for a very long time. I think as men realize that part of being a man is accessing the greatest amount of power that you can access, which is true vulnerability, right? When vulnerability is seen as a strength as opposed to weakness, I believe there'll be more connectedness. Because what we've lost is we've lost that tribal sense, right? And we're in this more individuated experience. Well, there's been a lot of pain delivered for a few thousand years, from the Romans to the Greeks, from the Greeks to the Macedonians, right? From the Germans to the Jewish, from the Russians to the Khazarians, right? From the Americans to the Native American Indians. Like, there's been a lot of pain, right? There's been a lot of hate. There's been a lot of rage. There's been a lot of disrespect, right? Just overall disgusting levels of disrespect. And now we're finally having these conversations like you and I are having, and people are getting to go, oh yeah, all I need to do is look over my shoulder, go back a few hundred years, and I can see it. I can see why we live in this disconnected state now, because humans don't trust other humans. Right? Like, and I just read an article on my news feed. In the United States, there were 146 or 164 mass shootings so far this year. I remember the very first one that happened in McDonald's, right? And it was one. And now one's turned into 164. Like, yeah, humans don't feel safe around each other. So unless we're willing, a few people are willing to stand up and have these conversations and dig deep and pull back the curtain and resolve the magnanimous levels of stress that live inside every single human, humans will continue to move into smaller segments. And they will feel more and more comfortable in isolation and less comfortable in connection. And so if you're fortunate enough to be raised in a family where there's love and connection, you keep that going through building out deep states of vulnerability. And in that vulnerability and in those states of honesty and transparency, the people around you see your humanity. And when they see it, they get it for themselves.
Beautiful end. I mean, I can't have summed that up any better myself. And I think, you know, to your point, if people are listening in, and even if one person walks away and, you know, starts that pathway to, as I said, humanizing themselves a little bit more, being more honest with themselves and finding those connections and vulnerability, then yeah, I think it's a snowball that does happen at some point a lot quicker, just like a snowball running down. It's very slow to get going, but once it gets going, it can really kind of snowball and run down a hill out of control. And I hope that maybe this conversation we've had today is the start of that snowball. So again, mate, I really appreciate your time, your wisdom, your sharing of your own journey and everything we've spoken about today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm up for these kinds of conversations.
Yeah, I love it. And as I said off air before we even started that, you know, I've been lucky enough to be an exercise physiologist most of my career, but I've loved kind of diving deeper into the kind of psychology of healing rather than the physiology of healing. Yeah. And I love these conversations as well. And so, yeah, I'm very appreciative that we've been able to kind of get together and make this happen. So it's been great, and I appreciate it again.
Well, what's funny, you're saying this, you know, my business is called True Body Intelligence. So it's right up your alley. So, yeah, absolutely. And that's what I get into. I get into the psychology around the physiology.
I love it.
And get people back on track.
I was going to say for those, I mean, I'll put it in the show notes as I always do for those who kind of want to reach out to yourself. I mean, tell us about any websites or social
media.
Yeah,
you can go. Yeah, you can go to truebodyintelligence.com and at truebodyintelligence.com, obviously order the book. Okay, there's the audio version of the book is on the site. Listen to that three times because there's education you need, right? Without knowledge, it makes it very difficult to take heartfelt action to your own benefit. And I've been researching and putting together systems for the last 25 years. And I will make it easy for you. right? And obviously there's going to be a free gift for your listeners, so they can already start getting involved in removing some tension and some stress from their bodies and feeling good, because that's all I care about. All I care about now is impact. I've already lived the life that I wanted. I've had all the experiences that I wanted to have. What else am I going to do now? Devote my life to helping other people get the life that they really want, which is hopefully a quiet mind, a comfortable body, grounded emotions, and abundant amounts of energy and a peaceful spirit. And if I can help people get that, what could be better than that?
Beautiful. Well, I always like ending off my podcast by asking a random question that came from last week's guest. And so that random question that came through, I think you've just already answered it yourself, but let me ask it anyway. Is that the random question that came was, what is your purpose?
You know, my purpose is to reduce the overall stress load on the planet by about 14-15%, and make sure that I get these tools into people's hands who want to experience happiness and joy and peace every minute of every day. I don't mean like a fleeting moment of like, oh, I felt so peaceful yesterday. No. I mean continuous states of peace. Or, oh, I felt really happy when we went on that trip. No, I mean happy every day, right? I mean happy every second. And that is possible. That is attainable.
Absolutely. Beautiful answer. And I would like to then offer up you then to ask next week's guest any question that comes to mind. It can be of any topic, can be of any genre, can be of any field. What's your random question for next week's guest?
My random question for next week's guest is, what's the most important thing for them to experience before they die?
Experience before they die.
Yeah.
Beautiful question. And I look forward to asking that of next week. But Chris, again, I can't thank you enough for your time and everything that you shared with us today, mate. I really appreciate that. And as I said, I hope people do kind of filter into the show notes, look at your website and kind of go down the pathway of learning more about what you're about and what you shared today. And I've really enjoyed it, if nothing else, mate. So I really appreciate it.
Thanks, mate. It's been awesome. So thank you for a great conversation. You summarize things really well. You ask really good, deep questions. And I hope the listeners get a lot out of this, because it's all about inspiration, right? Get inspired and then inspire somebody else. So I'm glad that there's people like you doing the work you're doing in the world, because we need you.
That's a really kind thing to say, and I really appreciate it, mate. So yeah, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Firstly, I hope you enjoy your time over in Australia, and I hope that we do get to cross paths. But until then, I'd like to thank everyone for joining in this week on the Let's Just Talk podcast. It's been a joy, and I hope to see you all next week. I love you all. I'll talk to you then. Bye.